I'm still on a New Year's kick, so to speak. I mean, it's still January, and yesterday I said Happy New Year to someone, and they said, yes, it is still the New Year, but doesn't necessarily feel like the New Year since we're just a few weeks into it already. But it does to me, and I think that the New Year has marvelous potential, and I'm excited that we're in the Gospel of Luke, because really, that matches, I think, some of the things that I would like to see happen in my life and your life as we're in Luke. Well, I thought about several different titles for this message, and one that I thought of was Fixer Upper. Fixer Upper. And yet you'll know on the notes there that I didn't use Fixer Upper. But when I say Fixer Upper, some of you kind of can connect with that title, because that's sort of a popular title. Now, there's a connection with Fixer Upper, and there's this idea of home renovation with Fixer Upper. And then there's this couple that's become famous, and you know them. I think you probably know them better than I know them. I don't know much about them. I just know their names, and you know their names, Chip and Joanna, and they're famous, really. And when I think about when I first saw them doing their thing and launching out, I was on a treadmill, and I was just noticing that there was this program that was doing some very interesting things to a home. And I chimed in and turned my dial to that particular show, and time after time, I would be in there exercising, and people would be watching that show. And so I thought, boy, I'm really hooked when I'm watching a sports event. I say HGTV over here, and I switch it to that TV. I'm thinking, wow, I'm hooked. And that's saying something about to me. Anyway, it's sort of surprising. They began in 2013. That's not very long ago. And they became kind of an instant hit, so popular. Their farmhouse kind of design is now mainstream. And if someone said, I'm going to Waco, Texas, the thing that they would think you were going to do going to Waco, Texas, is you were going to go to the Magnolia. I don't even know much about this, but that's where you would go. You know, it's like a point of destination now. And I think just go to Target. You can buy it there. But anyway, well, they have spearheaded a real movement towards this remodeling and renovation, it seems to me, and not only them but others, and it's a real craze. One of the first ones, you're going to see some pictures up here. One of the first ones was this shotgun house, and that's an interesting title, shotgun. I learned the meaning. You can go to the front door, and you can open the front door, and you can see all the way to the back window. So that's one of their houses. You're going to see some houses now that kind of like there's a kind of a nice, exciting change on the outside, and you'll like it. And people are excited about this. And this remodel thing is so interesting to me. I'm quite sure my son-in-law is excited that it's happening. But anyway, it's going to make an impact in his life for a long time. But the idea is that the impression on the outside can give you the sense that there's a genuine remodel on the inside. But that's not necessarily the case. So this emphasis about changing it, really, I think what really matters is what happens on the inside. Because the outside is what impresses people driving by, but on the inside, that's where you live. And so, hint, hint, changes on the inside matter most. And we know the famous statement, it's coming up right here, move that bus. It's a picture or two away. So anyway, I'm using this as an idea to get you thinking about why are we so excited about renovation and kind of like remodel. And well, I don't know, I'm not trying to be a psychologist here, but it seems to me that we like it so much because we actually have that same kind of longing of newness and renovation and transformation in our own lives with our soul. And I'm excited to tell you that there's a real renovation of the heart in our story today. And it's not surprising because Luke, he cares about these things. And he gives us a picture of the kind of things that Jesus can do in a person's life. So, we're to a story that Luke is the only guy to write about this story. And it's our next story in our journey through Luke. It's Luke 7, verse 36. I'll invite you to take a look. I've got it right here. It's on page 966. Oh, anyway, it depends upon your Bible, of course. That was a joke. All right, here we go. Verse 36. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. A woman in that town who lived a sinful life learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, so she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. As she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. Verse 39. You can put yourself in this guy's shoes. When the Pharisee who had invited Jesus saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who is touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him. Isn't that interesting? Jesus answered him. He wasn't talking to Jesus. Ah, Jesus knows his thoughts. "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. "Two people owed money to a certain money lender. One owed him 500 denarii, which is about 20 months of wages." Significant, right? "And another 50, which is 2 months of wages. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so they forgave the debts. So he forgave the debts of both. Now, which one of them will love him more?" And Simon replied, and I don't think he wanted to. I suppose it's like, okay, "the one who had the bigger debt forgiven." "You have judged correctly," Jesus said. And then he turned toward the woman. Isn't this interesting? Attention toward the woman, but he's talking to Simon. "Do you see this woman? I came into your house and you did not give me any water for my feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven, as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little." Then Jesus said to her, "Your sins are forgiven." And the other guests began to say among themselves, "Who is this?" That question is very important to Luke. Who is this? He wants people to know who Jesus is. Who is this who even forgives sins? And Jesus said to the woman, "Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Isn't that a fascinating story? So fascinating. And it has so many interesting parts to it. For me, it's like Luke has turned into an artist. We know Luke is a doctor, and we sense that in some of his writings and what he says. But here, he seems like an artist to me. He's painting such a vivid picture, really. And so that's what I think about, painting a picture. Let's paint the picture of our scene. Let's get it going. Let's think about it. Now, it's not too hard to imagine because several artists, I mean, you just go and put in Luke 7, 36 to 50, and you'll get picture and painting upon painting. Like one artist would focus on Jesus and the woman, and that would make sense. And as the woman shows such great humility, you can see Jesus being touched by her actions and her concern. That's one of the paintings that you see the focus of Jesus and the woman. Other paintings kind of broaden the scope, and I think that's good to do. So you have more of the scene, and you can see that there's more people involved, and there are more people involved. You can be sure of that. And so that you get the sense of some of the friends of Simon and other people. Well, actually, I think this painting doesn't have enough people in it. And yet, really, the focal point of the story is this woman. And so you see a picture of the woman. And lots of paintings will focus just on her. Well, in painting the picture, I want you to have a sense about an invitation. You, and let's put ourselves in the story, you and I are invited to the biggest house in town, the biggest house in town. And that is something noteworthy. And as we're in this environment, we realize we're in Galilee and there's these fishing communities and there's kind of an agricultural setting. And so these are small towns, and here we have the biggest house in town. And this Pharisee, who we learn to his name, Simon, has the invitation to have a dinner with Jesus. And really, his house could accommodate the sense and the significance of this. And it's not uncommon for someone like Simon to invite someone of notoriety, or at least popularity, like Jesus, to come to his house. And that's what happens. And we have, I want you to see that the house is big, and in the middle is a courtyard. Courtyard is, and there's probably a fountain. And then the table that's low to the ground, that's the way they did it, low to the ground is sort of in the center of the courtyard. And the ones especially invited would circle around the table, and they would recline. And as they would recline, they would be on one elbow, their feet would extend out, and they would eat with the other hand. And others would come. It was sort of okay to do. And they would come, and they would be on the outer, kind of maybe the fringe of the courtyard. And they would come to hear what the special guest had to say. And that's the idea, Jesus being the special guest. What was he going to say, and what was going to happen? And then the group of people that are around the table, they eat first. And then whatever's left over, others are invited to partake, if there's anything left over. That's really the scene. It's kind of an interesting scene, and I want to reiterate the fact that when they recline, their feet extend out. And here we have the moment in the story that everybody kind of like is taken by, that there's this woman, and she doesn't stay on the fringe. She walks in towards Jesus, doesn't say a word, and immediately begins to weep. And her tears begin to fall on Jesus' feet. Think about that. I mean, wow, just kind of a significant moment, but maybe even a little weird, you know? And she doesn't stop there. She gets right down by those feet, and she takes her hair that's been put up and lets it down. Wow, this isn't what you're normally going to see. A woman in modesty would keep her hair up, but no, she lets her hair down, and then she dries his feet with her hair and kisses his feet. Amazing. And then to anoint his feet. It's just all really such a surprising, kind of an amazing picture. But guess what? The heartbeat of it is, she is honoring Jesus. That's what she's doing. She's doing something that really would have normally been already done in so many words. We get this picture from verses 44 to 46. In 44 to 46, Jesus talking to Simon, telling him about my feet weren't washed and You didn't even greet me. The tradition, the cultural dynamics at play here are overlooked by Simon. You have the servant who's going to wash the guest's feet, the special guest anyway, like Jesus, and that didn't happen. And then you're going to offer him a kiss of greeting on his cheek, and you're going to anoint with some perfume on his hair or forehead. That's what you're going to do. That was the tradition, and it didn't happen. Oh, yes, it did. It happened through the woman. She did it. You know, if you'd come to my house and I would know you and everything, I would politely say, why don't you take your shoes off, get comfortable. And before that, I'd give you a hug because I know you. And then my wife is good with candles. She'll have some candles going. And that would be the way it is. But if I don't know you, I might not do any of those things. If I don't really know you, I'm probably not going to say, hey, take your shoes off. You might have holes in your sock. You know, I don't want to embarrass you. And I wouldn't probably hug you because I don't know you. I'd probably extend my hand to shake your hand and probably wouldn't have candles going. You know, I mean, I don't really know you. Maybe that's the way it was with Simon and Jesus. Maybe. They didn't really know Jesus. He had heard about him. I mean, the news about him was spreading like he had raised this guy, this young man from the dead in the city of Nain. That was pretty. That spread. And so it's probably this impetus of his curiosity and popularity that Simon wanted a guy that he didn't know to come to his house. And, you know, Simon would be cool to have a guy like Jesus in his house, right? So that's really the story, and that's the scene. And it has this open-door policy that the gate is open, and that's when the woman comes in. It's a fascinating picture, but it's really not the heartbeat of the story. The heartbeat of the story is how Jesus changes a life. That's what Luke cares about. So let's look at the characters. The characters of the story kind of bring out some really important posture to spiritual life. The first one is Simon. He's the first character I'd like to introduce you to. And Simon is this this main religious leader in town. He's well known. And I would suggest he's sort of a man of the outside. The outside looks pretty impressive in his life. I mean, and to Simon, you can get the sense that how things look is what matters the most. So his house and his status and his notoriety in the community, all big, they're a big deal. And everybody seems to be aware in the town about Simon and his significant role. He's a big shot, maybe the most influential person in town. And so you have that. And you see something about Simon in his posture of impressiveness. He's quick to judge. And so he judges someone that he doesn't really even know. And he judges quickly. And he makes judgment about Jesus. That's what he does. And we're privy to his thoughts, because in verse 39 we see his thoughts. And they're judgmental about the woman and Jesus. He's not a prophet. And Jesus is going to show him that he's a prophet. He's more than a prophet. He's God. And so you have this storyline, the renovation that Simon cares about is looking good on the outside, making sure that the people that drive by go, wow, that is one impressive dude. And that's what he cares about. And you get this strong impression that he didn't really think he needed forgiveness. And then there's the woman. The woman. She's the next character that comes into the scene in a way that catches our attention, and we're told about her secrets. She's sinned many, and she's alone. And so being alone, what kind of sin might you imagine? We don't know exactly, but what happens next is extraordinary, and yet we're tempted to judge A sinful woman, we're tempted to judge. And just like Simon, we'd kind of look at the situation and go, what's she trying to prove? What's she doing? She's pushing herself in here. And maybe we think she was a fake or she just wanted something. And so we'd have the tendency to judge too. But Jesus does something that helps us. He interprets why she's doing what she's doing. You see, Jesus can look on the inside, just like he did with Simon. He knew exactly what Simon was thinking. And guess what? He knows exactly what the woman is thinking. He knows what's going on inside of her. And he knows what's true. And he realizes that good things are happening on the inside. But really, as I put in the notes, she represents the fixer-upper. She does. See, inside, her soul is dark and wounded and messed up. Something that Simon would suggest you should avoid could rub off on you, you know. And so here it is. She releases her most prized possession. She has this beautiful alabaster jar. The perfume is probably costly. And she shares it as a reflection of a changed heart. Oh, let's not forget Jesus. Jesus is in the story too. and I call him the difference maker. That's really, he's there. And with Jesus, everything's an upside to me. He is there. And he realizes that the woman's response is a sincere one. It's important. And so he receives her kindness and humility and generosity as if ministry to him. That's what she's doing. She's serving him. She's honoring him. And Jesus receives that. He affirms that. He blesses that. So you know what's happening inside of her is genuine. He knows the thoughts of the Pharisee. He knows the thoughts of the woman. They're pure. They're sincere. They're full of love. They're genuine. He knows that. And so Jesus is the difference maker. He does two things. Even as Tyler suggested, he takes away. Jesus, the difference maker, he takes away what gets in the way. He takes that away, and he brings in something fresh and new. He did it in the woman's life. He does it all the time. These are our characters, and they really bring out the sense of response. I just wonder, which character in the story would you identify with most? Think about it. Well, actually, the story is amazing, and there's so many aspects of it you could bring out, but the last line is the crescendo. It says so much in the last line. Verse 50. It says, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. It's kind of an interesting statement, right? I mean, we've been talking about forgiveness and love and so. My last point is the significance of believing the message and the messenger comes out again. It's always woven in the gospel story, and it's woven in again, and it becomes so crucial. Believe the message and the messenger. That's the idea. And the main theme, of course, in the story is forgiveness. It's the main theme, forgiveness. And in verse 47, we see something that is very profound in the text. May not notice it right away, but if you did a little deeper research, you would see, wow, that is amazing. Her many sins have been forgiven. That's what it says. Her many sins have been forgiven. And that's significant enough, but the way that Jesus says it and the way it is recorded in the Greek language, it is the perfect tense. So the idea is that Jesus might have already met this woman previously. He might have previously shared contact forgiveness. Because in the perfect tense, it means you have been forgiven and you continue to be forgiven. And for him to give her that assurance in verse 48, it says your sins are forgiven. But he says they've already have already been forgiven. He's saying it again. He's reiterating. It's a powerful grammatical truth that her sins are forgiven now and continually. That's powerful. And as you look at the story, you might have the tendency to think that she's loving to get forgiveness. But the way that it's said, it's so clear. The invitation to forgiveness is the forerunner. It's like first, forgiveness available. And then there is this response of love. But in the middle, you go from forgiveness offered to faith received to producing love. Forgiveness received by faith produces love. That's the message. And it is undeniable as you get to verse 50. And Jesus announces to the woman before others too, your faith has saved you. It's like saying your faith has delivered you from your sins. Jesus offers forgiveness. We receive it by faith. And he does what? He erases our sin and makes a clean slate. A clean slate. Clean slate. Clean slate that can now be scripted with gratitude, right? Can be scripted with newness. Can be scripted with peace. Can be scripted with overflowing love. That's what happens. That's what happens. That's the story. Verse 47 is the theme. It puts this word therefore, which is always a pretty important word because it connects with what has been said and what the story is about. And then it says this profound truth. Therefore, I tell you. He says two things that are important in Jesus' teaching. Therefore, and truly, truly, therefore, I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. Literally, those that have been forgiven much will love much. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little. That's the theme. That's the theme for you and me. That's the message Luke wants to share with us. How would we apply this? I want us to apply this to our life, to us individually. This story isn't just an ancient story. It's one repeated time and again. It's alive today. The truth of it is alive today, and it's meant for you and me. So how do we apply it? Well, the woman, she rises in the story as the heroine. As a declared sinner, she is the example. Wow. And she shows us the possibilities. Jesus knew everything about her. Everything. Is it everything? Jesus knows everything about you and me. Everything. Everything. And that is sobering in and of itself. But when you realize that by faith, sincere faith, this woman is forgiven. And by faith, sincere faith, you and I, we're forgiven. And that's the message. And when that is realized, that you truly get that, you truly just kind of know that in that moment, the only thing that can come out is gratitude. And love for Jesus. It's there. It's the only thing that can happen. You see, I put this, forgiveness changes you. Forgiveness is transformational. It's transformational. Did Simon the Pharisee need as much forgiveness as the woman? I'll ask that again. Did Simon the Pharisee need as much forgiveness as the woman? Yes. Do you and I need as much forgiveness as the woman? Yes. Yes. That's it. When we realize that we're desperate without it, we're hopeless without it, we are not saved without it, we can realize that we have been forgiven much. We have forgiven much. We have been forgiven much. Much. So much. And when you know that, you know that, I know that, when the humility, the gratitude, the peace, and the love pours out. Pours out. That's the story. Is it your story? Ty and Rose. I appreciate that our practice is to offer communion each and every Sunday. But today, I'm especially grateful because the meal represents the wonder of forgiveness. Jesus offering his life as a sacrifice on the cross, shedding his blood for the forgiveness of sins. And I can be clean as I trust and put my faith in him. I'm clean. Now, past, now, and into the future. Prepared for eternity through his forgiveness. I truly believe that the deeper I embrace the wonder of forgiveness, the cleansing of Jesus, the more I am changed, the more I'm transformed by his gracious work. Let it in, friends. Let it in. And watch it melt your heart with gratitude. Invited to the table as you feel led. Will you please stand?